Welcome to Leading at a Local Level, a Mission Life Grace podcast where we talk about leadership issues for organisations and local churches from a biblical perspective. Our hope is that the investment of time in this episode will equip you to build healthy teams that will strengthen and enable the church and Christian organisations to fulfil their God-given mission. In this series, we're looking at leading diversity and how to lead different groups well in the church. And in this episode, we're going to be looking at leading a multi-generational church or organization. What does a multi-generational church look like? How do older people in the church often feel about the church? And how can we help to find their role within it? As always, it's good to be here with John. How are you today, John?
Hey, Tim. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. I must admit, I'm just reflecting on multi-generational because this year I turn 40. And I think when I was younger, I actually saw people who are 40 as really old, especially if they've got grey hair like me. So I've just been reflecting on that as we've been preparing for today. But yeah, apart from that, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I am also, I'm not 40, not yet anyway.
I'm much older than you, of course.
Not far behind you. Yeah, I shall be catching up. Indeed, it's one of those things, isn't it, when you talk about old age, you don't realise. I started to say to my friends recently, like, particularly ones that are kind of 30 or younger, it's like, you know, you'll find out. You'll find out in a few years, things like your knee starts to feel sore and your back starts to get sore.
And when you make the noise when you stand up in your chair, isn't it? And you sit down, it's just, you know, you're like, okay, my body's getting older for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good. All right. Okay, John. Brilliant. Well, let's bring in our special guest today. So part of our Leading in Diversity series, we're going to be inviting different guests in. And so today we've got a good friend, someone who's done a few of these before with us. And so let's just say hi to Chris. Let's bring Chris in. Morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, John. I am well, thank you. Yes, I feel quite comforted listening to you guys talk about old age at 40. I think, come on. I could hear the violins.
Chris, you've got some books just like me. This is so good. I like your bookshelves. You've got three of them.
Oh. Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, we should give some to Tim.
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit left out. My bookshelves, I to be fair, have four bookshelves, but they're downstairs. My wife moved them down to the front room. So maybe I should move my podcast recording to the front room as opposed to my office. But yeah, anyway, so that's good. It's good. Well, let's just introduce today's topic, which is, do we have an old age problem? Do we have an old age problem? And I think that when we talk about leading diversity, we talk about different areas of diversity, and our minds can often sort of jump straight to kind of some of the hot button kind of diversity topics in our society today. But one that often gets overlooked is this issue of ageism, if that's a thing, which I think it is. And the fact that, you know, we have lots of people in our churches and organizations that are older. We were just having a conversation before we came on air, which was, you know, really this question of, well, what word do you use? What should be the term you use when you're talking about people that are older? You know, we don't want to be offensive, do we, when we're saying about these things. And so what's your thoughts, chaps? Don't all speak at once.
Oh, I was just saying that we don't use the term elderly in hospitals anymore. Like Chris, I mean, what do you mind if someone says you're older or you're elderly? How does it feel for you?
Yeah, elderly, probably. I'd not thought about it before you mentioned it today. Probably wouldn't like to be called elderly, because I think age, I've said this, age is an attitude.
Yeah,
you can be old at 50, 60, you know, and it's in your mind. And yeah, seniors is good.
Yeah.
Super seniors. So I think we do have to be careful, but it's the attitude behind it. It's what's meant behind the word is more important, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I like the word older, because you're always older than somebody.
Yes.
at whatever age you are. You're always older than somebody. I think one of the challenges that we're going to explore is that there are, I think, some stereotypes and some preconceived kind of ideas around being older or being a super senior. And particularly, you know, people could often talk very negatively about old age, you know, the idea that, you know, that if you're older, that you know, you are likely to, it's very stereotypical, isn't it? You know, you must like hymns as opposed to, you know, contemporary music. You're going to immediately be resistant to change just simply because you're older. You're going to want to talk about the good old days all of the time. And you're going to sit and kind of, you know, complain that the world is not what it once was. And I think those things are completely unfair. I think that I know a lot of older people that are actually far more enthusiastic about change than younger people. I don't think that you're, as you said, age is an attitude. Mm-hmm. And I think that often we almost kind of make these stereotypes out to be facts, but they're not facts, are they? It's not true. And so I think, you know, that to me, I think is kind of the big problem. We're often overcoming these kind of mental stereotypes about kind of older people. And it's interesting, I think the Bible actually has quite a bit to say about this subject as well. I mean, you know, you've quoted it in one or two things you've written, Chris, but there's plenty of scriptures that say, you know, I'm just reading here from Psalm 71, verse 18, which you quote, which is, even when I'm old and grey, do not forsake me, God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your mighty acts for all who are to come. And so it's like, you know, we talk about God's workmanship, don't we? You know, Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, you know, we are God's workmanship, but there's no age limit on that. It doesn't stop saying that you know, we get to a certain point and God loses interest. I suppose my first question, you know, in this conversation is, how do we go about potentially addressing some of these stereotypes? How do we go about kind of, you know, making it clear that actually being old or older is not necessarily a bad thing? It's not necessarily what people have kind of these preconceived ideas about. How would you say you would address those kind of concerns?
I think it's a two-sided challenge. I think for the older person, there are certain attitude changes they need to address, adjust, or whatever. And for the younger, the way they treat older people often is a challenge as well. We have to remember culturally, it changes throughout Europe. Certain nations have a different view of the elderly than maybe we do in this country. Sometimes the elderly or the older person is viewed as a burden in this country. And they feel that they're costing too much. And yet statistics tell us they actually bring a lot of finance into society. They're not the financial burden some people have. But I think it's a two-sided coin, and the older person has to constantly check their attitude. Yeah, there are certain things I love. You know, I love certain things that are from my past, but I also love certain things of my present and hopefully of my future as well. So it's constantly moving, and I think the best, well, of course, the framework of reference has to be scripture. And I think the scriptures talk about old and wisdom and gray hairs and all of that. And it's more of a blessing than a curse that some people would have you to think.
And so do you want to ask you a question, really? I think one of the questions I've got, how do you, I mean, obviously you're a, what did you describe yourself as? Super senior. Is that what it was? A super senior. So how would you, we're sub 40, as we've just declared. But for those that are kind of, say, 60 and above, often what do you think their perspective is? Often how do they feel about church? Obviously, you can't speak for all older people everywhere. But obviously, you know, you've got more friends than maybe we have who are in the 60 plus kind of bracket. What would you say if you're speaking to younger leaders particularly? You know, what is their perspective on their role in church and how often they're viewed and people's attitude towards them?
I don't want to generalize, because that's the danger, to make a general statement. But a lot of people in their 60s and 70s, maybe even into their 80s, particularly if they've been around a certain organization and been in, a church for a long time, a lot feel undervalued and underused. And that's where they come from. Now, they have a choice. What do I do? Do I just sit back and do what is expected of me? Nothing. And just give of my finances and smile and nod. But I think it's time for the seniors to sit up and to say, no, I have a purpose in life and I have to find that. I have to say the last year I've had to come to a challenge in my own life. I've been involved in church leadership for, say, 50 years. And we have just created a whole youth or a lot younger leadership. And I've had to say, well, where do I fit within this? What do I do? Because personally, I don't believe there's any retirement in the kingdom. Mm. Yes, the Levites at 50 were, people take that as the only scripture, but they weren't retired, they were repurposed. Yeah. And what I had to ask myself, how do I repurpose myself in this season of my life? And it's two-sided. So I think some feel undervalued and underused.
Mm-hmm. John, you work for a Christian charity as part of your life. Do you recognise that? Would you say that you see that in the volunteers you work with?
Yeah. So, I mean, the majority of the volunteers that we probably work with are older than myself. And some of them are thinking about retirement from mainly being doctors, or they are retired and they think about how best to use their time. And I would echo what Chris has said. I do hear quite frequently that people want to give, and they're often are asked to give financially because they're assumed to be in general in a better financial position. But I think people do have a lot to give. A lot of people that I deal with, again, not everybody, but a lot of people say they feel like they don't perhaps want to be involved in all the ins and outs of day-to-day, you know, organizational leadership, but actually that they have particular training or skills that they would love to contribute. And so one of my roles is to find ways of doing that. So maybe it's help, you know, setting up a mentoring program. I've got plenty of people who are older say, I'd be very happy to mentor somebody. Mm-hmm. But the kind of the organizational side of designing a program is perhaps not something that many people volunteer to do. So I think absolutely people are willing, and once actually provided with those clear opportunities and the permission to go and to lead and to contribute, people are very, very willing and keen to do so, in my experience.
Mm. I think it's interesting, isn't it, when you talk about, you know, people want the perspective of older people in terms of what they want to do and what they don't want to do. And I think, you know, I mean, Chris, you've just talked about retiring from sort of essentially like frontline leadership. Mm-hmm. There are surely, I would imagine, some things that you're actually quite enjoying about not having to be involved. I mean, you've done pastoral work, you've done all kinds of that, you know, and I know that sort of the hard labour that comes with being on the front line is actually something that older people are quite relieved about. We've got a guy in our church who is kind of in his late 60s. He was a pastor, he pastored several churches and then was a head teacher. And we really appreciate him in the church. And he doesn't try and get involved in leadership, but he does have a huge amount to offer and to contribute. And he enjoys that, I think, finding that space. But I think one of the difficulties is that particularly, and maybe this is a challenge to younger leaders, is that you tend to just be so busy that you're kind of moving at such speed that to take the time to kind of stop and go, do you know what, let's just go and ask, you know, my sort of super seniors what they think and how we can involve them, almost just they're not involved in the conversation, they just kind of automatically get forgotten about. And I think sometimes some of this stuff's almost unintentional. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about that, but it's almost unintentional oversight rather than intentional oversight.
Moving from frontline leadership, as you call it, for me personally, the hardest thing is that you don't know everything. Mm. You don't know what's going on. And I think as a granddad, when you don't know what your children are doing or your grandchildren are doing, that's hard because you've been in an environment where you know everything that your children are doing. Yes, you're transporting them, you're helping them, doing all that sort of stuff. But the not knowing for me is a real challenge because I like to know. I like to know what's going on. But you talked about, and John, you talked about the mentoring. And I think there's a key here. When the Levites were kind of set down at the age of 50, they weren't set aside. They were given a different role. And I'm looking at this whole thing called elders in the gate. Yeah. And it seems like the Levites sat in the gate of the city to offer wisdom to those who are asking. And I think it's a mentoring role. So right now what I'm doing, I'm setting up church in Costa. So let me explain what I mean. On a monthly basis, I get young guys who come in and have a coffee with me, and I talk to them and they talk to me. I'm wanting to learn from them. You know, I don't want to be in a group of old people of my age. I want to be around younger people and listen to what they're facing, because I want to know that I can pray about it. And maybe if they want to ask of my mistakes or what the lessons I learned, I think this resource that is in my age group is being sadly lost. This is what caused me to get into this whole thing: the experience, the expertise, the networking, the knowledge, the resource in the people of my age group. If we're not careful, that it's going to go to the grave without being used. And that's really, as I look around churches and seeing people have so much to give, and yet the young leaders are busy, but they have to find time just to sit down and talk to the older generation.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. There's some great research from Barna, who looked at what makes, they call, resilient disciples. So this is amongst like younger age groups, like 18 to 35. And one of the five things was multi-generational relationships. They were saying that those people in that age bracket who had deep, basically mentoring type relationships, a close relationship with somebody who's older than them, they were talking about in the context of Christian faith, were much more likely to be what they call resilient disciples, to still be active in their faith. So, and the thing is, you probably don't need Barna to tell us that. The Bible tells us that, for example. We know that intuitively, but there's that gap, isn't there? And I mentored a young guy late last night. We were sitting out, and he's been looking for advice, wanting advice and support for a few years. And then I've got people in the church who are older, who would be perfectly capable of giving that advice, who will say to me, oh, I just feel like I'm not really valued as much, or, you know, I'm not really asked for my opinion. And I'm in the middle, and I'm like matchmaker, you know, like there's one here, there's one. And I get quite frustrated by it. And so I think actually we have a role as leaders to be looking across and saying, well, how can we bring groups together? How can we say, look, this is what you've got to give, and this is what you need. And actually we all, as you said, Chris, we need each other, and the relationships are usually entirely mutual and beneficial in different ways.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd add to that, John, there is a responsibility on my generation to make themselves available. I think psychologically or in their emotions, they've kind of put themselves on one side and taken on this secular idea of retirement, which my research was... In my next book, there's a chapter called Sinking Bismarck, and German Chancellor called Bismarck set up the retirement philosophy because he saw a lot of young people not having jobs. So everyone over 70, I think, was set aside to give work. But we've taken on board this retirement issue, and I think it's affecting my generation. Yes, we can do less of the other stuff we did, which we should do, have more time for ourselves. But we have a wealth that needs to be pulled on and drawn on. And yeah, I think it's a two-sided coin.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges, Chris, I think this is the point you're drawing out, is that I think some of this also sits with older people. As you've said, and I think, you know, I mean, again, I suppose that's a question. So why is it, I suppose, maybe digging into that, and, you know, we'll have older people, we'll have younger people listening to this. Why is it, do you think, older people don't invite people out for coffee? Because I remember you and I had this conversation a while ago, I think. And I remember we were talking about this probably 3 or 4 years ago, I think, probably prior to COVID. I think I just said to you, just ask them, you know, text and ask. You know, I think, you know, it seems to me that both sides are kind of often sitting around waiting to be asked. You know, the older folks are waiting to be asked for someone. And I'll be honest, I mean, this is just, you know, my experience. Sometimes I almost feel, this is my perception, almost there's a little bit of pride sometimes in older folks who almost sort of say, well, you know, I know stuff, but if you can't be bothered to ask me, then, you know, why should I, you know, almost why should I make the effort? That's sometimes how it's come across, like, to me. I mean, not from you, Chris, just want to put that out there, but almost that's your perception. And then, but on the flip side, the moment you ask them, they're like, oh, I'm so glad that someone's actually asked me.
Yes.
So you know, what, why, you know, how do we help break that barrier down? Because it clearly is a mindset problem, isn't it?
It is. I think you mentioned pride. I think we can feel a bit above ourselves. Mm. I used to use the illustration of the relay race. I will pass the baton on to the next generation, but you got to run with me, catch up with me, and I'll pass the baton on. And if you want to have a chat, get a coffee with me. But it wasn't happening. So mm. I've turned around now, slowed down, and held the baton out, said, come on, I want to have coffee with you. So I am being proactive rather than the other way around. And I think seniors need to be proactive and stop feeling either sorry for yourself or my life's over at the end. Get with young people. It will help you mentally, emotionally. And I love listening to some of the young ideas. I mean, some of them are crazy, but it keeps you young. If I'm with older people, it generally gets around to the ailments. It gets around to the things that they no longer can do, and it gets depressive. So, you know, we've said this before, John's mentioned it, but you've got to be proactive. Please don't sit at home expecting people to come and ring your bell. You go out there and say to, you know, guys, say to a younger guy, can we get a coffee? You know, do that.
Yeah, I think what I've heard said before is that it's possible to have an identity crisis in every decade of life. And we kind of just assume that it's just the younger folk who are like having this midlife crisis or crisis of identity. I've had it described to me, or people say that in a very honest moment, and actually sometimes for all of us, it can be pride that keeps us from admitting these things. But you know, this identity crisis that actually my status, my leadership, my career, you know, in retirement, a lot of those things are taken away. You're not seen as somebody who's respected, and you're often quiet. So the onus is therefore on younger leaders to actually draw those things out, to understand people well, to actually see not in so much in who they are, but to value them as a whole person. But actually the challenge as well, if you're in that stage of life, is to say, where is my identity truly? Yes. And to be rooted in, you know, as Christians would say, rooted in our identity in Christ.
I'd say to young leaders, don't value people for what they can or cannot do. Value them for who they are as an individual.
It's definitely a Protestant work ethic thing, isn't it? You know, our whole society has been set up to say the Protestant work ethic is this idea that essentially has underpinned our society for the last 300 or 400 years, I guess, really, is that basically you're valuable based on what you can do and what you can achieve and what you can, you know, add to society. And I think that obviously we look at these metrics when it comes to older people, and we essentially immediately assume that because they can't lift the chairs or they can't operate the tech desk, that, you know, that therefore they're no longer valuable. And I think we've got an obsession with youth, haven't we? We do have an obsession with youth in this society that's actually a fixation that's unhealthy. And I think that's the thing that I suppose I've realised as I've got older, is that I love sitting. I mean, that's why, I mean, you know, Chris and I are friends. I mean, I would genuinely call us friends. And we've been friends now for, 5 years at least, maybe longer, 6, 7 years even, really. And I just enjoy sitting down with Chris and listening to Chris, because I think he's got so much wisdom. And I think it's just... You know, I suppose it's kind of breaking that mindset that all the wisdom is in young people. Otherwise, you get into a Rehoboam situation, don't you, where you turn to your friends and your friends are completely stupid. And if he'd gone to the older folks, they'd listened to the old men, he'd have been a much better king. We do a fixation, don't we? And I think that's the challenge, I think, sometimes as a leader. I mean, I'm a pastor of a church. It's realising that actually, if you're not careful, you always gravitate towards younger people, nearly always, I would say, because, you know, they're exciting, they're dynamic, and that's not necessarily always what you need, dynamic. You need sometimes wisdom, don't you?
Yeah, and we are giving a lot of younger people opportunity to preach or to lead. But what so often they miss is someone to bounce things off. They need the critical friend who will listen to them and help them in their preparation, and afterwards do a debrief and say, what do you think? Not to criticize them, but to build them up. Say, you know, this was great, but maybe next time you could think about this. My generation wants the young generation, and it is a youth-centric society, but we want them to win. Mm. We really want them to go further than we ever went. And really, my generation has to be available to help them in whatever way it can. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So here's a question then, Chris. So how do we, as, and maybe this is just a general question for people, but, you know, how does it, as a young leader, how do I spot or get better at spotting the hidden gems that exist within, you know, super seniors? You know, how do I spot that? How do I see that? What am I likely to be seeing, you know, kind of, because they're not going to be kind of, you know, jumping up and down and, you know, kind of volunteering for the tech desk, I would imagine. How do we get better at sort of seeing hidden treasure within senior, super seniors?
Well, it may sound very simplistic, but talk to them.
Mm.
Sit and listen. Ask them to tell you their story. Mm. They'll love to. You may have to block out a while to do it, or take it in stages. But my generation love to tell you their stories, what they've seen God do, and where they've got it right and got it wrong, and get to know them. And prayerfully go to that conversation and say, Lord, I need you to show me behind what I see as an older person. Don't look at them as an older person. Don't look at their frailty. Don't look at what they can't do. Ask God to show you the shining in their eyes. You know, what are they still sparking about? And they're light up. And so, yeah, there you go. That's where it is. We do need spiritual insight. But also we do need some practical care for them. I don't know whether you'll come onto this, but there is such a silo mentality in some churches that says, put all the old people together in a group and that will deal with it. I balk at that. I run from older groups because it is not the answer to put everyone together, because all you'll find is everyone sharing ailments.
Yeah. Yeah, my experience about, and I'm doing this now, John and I do this when we get together. What medication are you on? It's just, you know, oh, I'm on that one. It's like bingo. like medication bingo, isn't it? You know, blood pressure and, you know, this and that. And absolutely. Yeah. No, it's good. John, do you want to add something, John?
No, I think some just helping, just having, as you say, having the conversation. Chris, having the conversation about with people, but actually also across the church, it's just having that conversation about where people are at and their stages, and seeing everybody equally. So it can be very tempting to go to somebody who seems very available, and you have a quick conversation with them. But as you were alluding to there, Chris, sometimes we just need patience. How do we spot hidden gems? Well, often we have to spend time mining for them. And I think there's an element of patience that we need to just resist being too pragmatic and rushed, and just take time with people. And people are always looking for secrets to leadership, aren't they? But I think people and time and patience are a really good place to start.
I guess it's the same across the board. Value people for who they are, not what they do.
Yeah.
Because if you value them for what they do, the older generation will get missed out. Because they haven't got the time, the resources, or the energy to do that. And I think that's why the Levites were stepped down at 50, because they hadn't got the eyesight to see the things they needed to see. They hadn't got the energy to do it, but they were repurposed. Mm. And that's how we need to see this senior generation.
I think that there are some really practical barriers, though, aren't there, in this that need to be considered. I'm just going to suggest one. One of the difficulties of doing older, working with kind of older people and younger people, is that older people start to not enjoy going out at night as much, which sounds like a really silly thing, but it's true, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got some fantastic people. We've got a lady called Keegan in our church, and she is in her mid-70s, and she's as strong as a kind of as any almost women half her age, to be honest. And we've got another lady who's 93. I mean she's amazing. This 93-year-old, she still comes to my home group, and every week we go and pick her up, and she comes. But actually, one of the difficulties we're finding is that a lot of older people, practically, you want to get them involved. They often don't, even this lady Keegan's like, I don't really like driving long distances at night, particularly if it's in the dark, or they're worried about coming out and slipping and falling. Because obviously, you know, the older you get, you know, when you get something that goes wrong, it takes a lot longer to recover for. And so I think that is just a really practical challenge that you need to think through, I think, as a leader, is when do you organise things? Because the reason you have old people's groups, or older people groups, sorry, should I say, is that often the truth is they happen midway through the day, because that's when, and then people like to eat, they like to eat, it seems to me like I've got some older friends, they enjoy eating at lunchtime, but they won't eat past 6 o'clock and things like this, which of course, if you're a family, that's a very practical barrier to inviting someone around for dinner, is that, you know, I'm not very good after six, you know, it's like, and I think that's just, you know, we need to think those things through. And much like, you know, we're going to talk, you know, in other, you know, sort of episodes, we're going to talk about other types of diversity. We need to make allowance for this kind of stuff. Like, we should be making, recognizing that that's just part of getting the best out of them is sometimes doing things that, you know, practical things like that. Sorry, just. Yeah.
Well, it's true. A lot of older people do not want to go out at night, especially in the winter. And don't want to have heavy meals. We often go out now in the evening and we'll say, well, just come for coffee and cake. Please don't do a meal for us because it'll be too late. I think also we have to be spiritually practical. Why is it we can't ask older generation to the youth group and quiz them and ask certain questions and get them to tell their story? You will have to lead it, but get them to tell their story. And if it's at night, why don't you chauffeur them from door to door and treat them as kings and queens? And love so that. You value them.
Yeah.
And so they haven't got to worry about any of that, and see them into their house when you drop them off at night. But we've got to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Can I say, Chris, I love that. I just love that idea. I like creating a culture of honour.
Yeah.
Around our older people. And particularly, it's easy to create a culture of honour for ex-pastors.
Yes.
But what about the ex-taxi driver, you know, or the ex-plumber, or the ex-kind of civil servant who just did 40, 50 years in a job very faithfully? And I just love that. And that's a great idea, Chris. Again, treating them with honour. It's good. Absolutely. What are the practical suggestions you think you've got? John,
I've got a friend who speaks regularly in this church, and there's a lady who will hold up a little placard that says slow down and speak up, and he says he finds that a really helpful reminder, because and it's not just for those who are elderly, but actually just thinking about how we communicate for those with hearing difficulties. What's our sound system? Are we actually, are there places where they can sit further forward if they want to? Mobility issues, are we actually thinking about just the practicalities of, we've got tea and coffee being served like all the way down there or down some steps? And just, I think it's part of that culture of honour where we just are deliberately thinking, okay, how are we practically set up to serve people who perhaps their mobility is more limited or their hearing is more limited? And that's, I see one of the things happening in churches I'm involved in where people bring in cups of tea to people. And so it's just loving people well and making it a culture where people think, I can actually enjoy being here and take part, and I'm not limited in those ways.
I would add to that and say, take the positives to speak to the negatives. Say someone, there's a married couple who are married for 25 years or even 50 years. I would say, bring a cake, celebrate in the church service, then preach on marriage. You know, take that opportunity to celebrate them where they're at. Or someone retires from 20 odd years in a workplace. You know, that is a rarity these days, and it will be increasingly a rarity. Use it to bring biblical truth and to use that in a positive way.
Well, I love that, Chris. I think that's, it's interesting. You, I'm sure there's a Spicerism about celebrating things. I can't think of what it is, but there is. But what you celebrate makes a big difference. And I think, like, one thing we've been doing at our church over the last couple of years is celebrating the ordinary. So we've done a couple of interviews with just people who are just doing very, you know, we had a couple a while back, he's a bus driver and she was a teaching assistant, and they were doing some fostering, and we were saying to the church, like, guys, you know, these are people that you should be looking at. You know, they're in their kind of 50s now. You know, these are people you should be looking at. But I think we should be doing the same with older people. As you say, if you want to know what it takes to make a marriage over 50 years, go and speak to these people. You know, they want to talk to you. You know, if you want to know what it is, you know, to be successful in business for a career and not burn out, go and talk to you know, to Barry. You know, Barry's been doing that. You know, if you want to know what it's like to raise kids and cope with grandkids, go and speak to Mary, you know. And I think maybe I'm just thinking, I'm not, you know, that you guys know me quite well. My brain's now whirring. And I'm thinking, yeah, we need to celebrate people in our congregations who have done well, who have lived godly, honourable lives, and we need to be telling our congregations or our organisations, even if you're not a congregation, go and sit down with that person, you know, go and make an appointment with them. You know, these are people that we should honour and respect because they've got a lot to contribute.
Yeah, and ask some of this generation, how did they cope when interest rates were at 15%
yeah.
and paying a mortgage? You know, how did you live faithfully in those times?
That's a good question. And I think also just very, very practically thinking about, you know, we know that loneliness is prevalent in our society, but that in general, it does increase with older age for various reasons. And so just being obviously during the week, being aware of that, there will be a growing number of older people who are more socially isolated, who perhaps are not being able to be cared for by their families or are in care homes. And They are invisible and silent in general. And I think it's a big responsibility for us to be thinking in the state where I live, you know, there are, how do we actually get contact with people? There's a lady who sits in the care home where we walk our kids to school, and she sits there by her window, and you see her face light up when she gets away from my kids. And she's just one of, yeah, thousands of older, generally older people just in my area. How are we reaching them? How can we be creative to do that work?
I love that. There's a mission field in the Maturo.
Did you make that up? Or did you that just, on the no. Oh, Chris, it just flows, isn't it? It just comes to you.
But I just think that's an untapped mission field. You know, waving to someone, building a relationship. I like that, John.
Good. Well, talk about this lady Keegan. Now, I love Keegan, right? So she actually has started like just with it's technically her granddaughter, but her granddaughter and all of her granddaughter's friends now come. I think it's about once a month on a Saturday morning, and they bake bread and sew. Because Keegan was a tailor and a seamstress, and she was very good at it. So, you know, all these girls now go around, you know, age sort of 11, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, and they go around and they sit, they have bread, and they sew together. And Keegan loves it, and the girls love it. And you know, it's just really simple. I mean, it can be that practical, can't it? That actually, like, there are skills, practical skills. You know, thinking, to be honest, like, my grandfather was an excellent craftsman, but you know, he never taught me anything, and it's a shame, because actually had he taught me some practical skills, that would have been super useful for the first 10 years of our marriage, until YouTube came along, because YouTube has somewhat replaced that. But nothing quite beats, you know, an older person saying, oh, can I come and help you fix your fence, or, you know, do stuff practically, because often that's a really good way. Because a lot of younger people, John, I don't know if you're the same, but you start out with very poor DIY skills.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You made me think there, Tim, when I was new to this pastoring, a very young, young guy, I had some older people who were housebound. And I think of one particular saint, she had been a missionary. I would go and visit her and share things I asked her to pray for. She was a prayer warrior, so she felt included, involved. She couldn't get out of the house, but I shared what was going on, the things that were concerning me. I could trust her, but I got her to pray for stuff. And it's being that creative that we know how God could use people and they don't feel useless. Because let's face it, when you're on your own in a house, you hardly see anyone, you can tend to feel a bit useless. God, what do I have purpose in this day and age? Right. And I think God needs to help us.
Absolutely. Well, one more suggestion was I think, like, what I've seen done really well, again, in our church by other families, is they almost adopt an old person. As a grandparent, and I, let me tell you, as John and I will both testify, like, you know, you want to go out as a young adult or a young person who's got children particularly, but you have children. And a lot of people, particularly, we've got quite a number of international people that have joined our church whose families live thousands of miles away, and they don't have any family in the UK at all. And so actually having a grandparent who you can kind of connect with and who will come round and volunteer to, you know, to babysit your kids, you know, maybe obviously if they're really difficult, then, you know, that's not always easy, but, you know, you've got loads of them. But, you know, actually, like, having a grandparent type figure can make a huge difference to your life if they're willing to babysit, you know, massive, yes, if you've not got family.
MLG is a step ahead of a lot of places where you have a family kind of sense of community. Mm. I grew up with people in church who were uncles and aunts, and they weren't related.
Yep. Mm.
But they were older people. And if they saw me go in a certain direction, they'd come and lovingly talk to me. Yeah. And we've lost some of that community, and we need to regain it.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's that paradigm of the church as family, isn't it? I'm just reminded of my wife's has an Auntie Joan, exactly that. She's a lady who didn't have grandchildren of her own. And she was adopted her family, you know, and she's an auntie. She's as close as being a blood relative. And it's a beautiful picture of that very thing that we're meant to be family. And that's the very thing that is disintegrating, you know, year on year in our society. Mm. And that's what the church is called, to be this intergenerational, multi-generational family.
Yes. Mm. And some cultures do it better than us. They're naturally a one big, like the big Greek fat wedding, was it? That the whole kind of Greek context where everyone's a big family, an extended family. And there is a difference, I'll add this, that between multicultural churches and intercultural churches. Yeah. And I think it's the inter we need to move towards. It's great having mixture in ages, but it's how they mix together within that setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably worth, maybe if you are a younger leader and you're listening to this, asking yourself a question in your organization, in your church: how much opportunity is there for that mix, I guess, opportunities? Like, so are there opportunities for that happening? You know, are you doing things that specifically, and the trouble is, the bigger the church gets, I mean, I see this when we had a church picnic, you know, last Sunday, although it rained, so it was indoors. You know, what happens is the kids gravitate to be with the kids, the families gravitate to be with the families, and the older people kind of gravitate to be on their own, or they don't come. Mm-hmm. Because they have to kind of, they want to get home or whatever. And in a sense, you know, we need to be, I mean, I'm just thinking about our own church, we need to get better at this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About actually, and I think it is about flagging it, kind of saying, guys, I want you to mix and to sit with people that are not your same age. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if we need to do better at just trying to create that culture. It's culture, really. You can do an event.
Yes.
But you've got to change the culture, haven't you? And I suppose you change the culture by making those people feel valued.
And asking people to help. Is really key. And it's sometimes we feel overwhelmed. We think, oh, I'm leading this thing and I've got to think about diversity and all these different areas that we're talking about in this series. But actually being able to ask someone and say, look, could you just be thinking, like, as we do activities week to week, if there are things that we're doing that you feel are excluding those who are elderly, can you just be the early warning system for that, you know, and come and chat about it? And so so it's not all on you as a leader to always be thinking about, because you will drop things, as I certainly do.
Yeah.
Have people you specifically charge with or ask to be your eyes and ears in that area. What are we doing well? What can we do better with our elderly folk? And not just the numbers, as you say, but what does it look like to truly be an intergenerational family?
Absolutely. Very good, very good. So you can kind of sum up this conversation, just picking out a couple of little nuggets of Chris. First is ages and attitude. Ages and attitude. And I think, you know, we need to encourage people to think that it's not, you know, I said the outer man wastes away, but the inner man is renewed day by day. And I think this is the other one, not retired, repurposed.
Yeah.
We not see people retired, but repurposed. And I think that, you know, it's a great challenge. And if there's any fruit out of this podcast, my hope is that, you know, even if people are taking one, two, three steps just towards being a more intergenerational church, then I think, you know, we're doing a good thing here. Do you want to just tie it up, Chris? What's your kind of any kind of closing thoughts or remarks? And then from you, John.
If I can just say on the repurposing, what I've been looking at is biblically new wineskins and old wineskins. Yeah. And when the old wineskins became hard and were liable to crack and lose the wine, evidently they used to soak them in oil. I would say to my generation, you need to be soaked daily in the oil of the Spirit. It's a bit of a preach there, but the only way we're going to be continually useful in the kingdom is to be full of the Holy Spirit and remain supple. Because we're going to have, things are changing, and you know, we're what I call a Google generation in a digital world. You know, we're a Gutenberg generation in a Google world, and things are so different. I'm analog, you're digital. You know, and we have to change our mentality and not be just complaining or groaning, but repurpose. Let God repurpose us for this generation.
That's good. It's good. John, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think just encouragement to all of us, as you've said it already, God numbers our days, that he's given us good works to do in advance, that we might walk in them, and that will look different in different phases of our lives. And it's just to emphasize that idea of valuing people for who they are, not for what they do.
Yeah.
And that for every moment that we're here, that we all have a purpose. We will have a contribution to make to what God is doing in his world. So, and I find that incredibly encouraging for me and for others that I'm leading.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Chris, for joining us. It's been great to have you. And then thanks, everybody, for listening. We hope this episode has been helpful in equipping you to lead at a local level by building healthy teams that will help strengthen and grow your church or organisation. If you've liked what you've listened to, please consider subscribing to keep updated on leading at a local level. But until next time, see ya.
Right.